So this episode of The Leader Smith is unlike any other. It would be silly for me to ignore what's going on with the George Floyd tragedy, so that's what I'm going to talk about. Stay tuned.
In a world of incompetent bosses, micromanagers, and petty tyrants, one management professor claims that he can help you become the kind of leader that you would want to follow. You are listening to The Leader Smith. Now, here is your host, Darren Gurdis.
So this episode of The Leader Smith is about how I'm processing the George Floyd tragedy and the riots that have followed. These are my personal thoughts. It's not comprehensive. I don't know that I have it all wired together, and I appreciate your understanding that I don't have it together. It's just me processing. And maybe it'll help you process too. It's from my perspective. It's not trying to be complete and here's all the answers. So please understand that. Okay, so George Floyd died on Monday at the hands of a police officer in Minnesota. When I first saw this on a friend's Facebook on Tuesday, I kind of ignored it because this friend's always virtue signaling. She's pretty far on the left and always going on about this, that, or the other thing. Okay, by Wednesday, I saw little bits of the story in the news, and I started to pay attention. I was thinking, okay, what's going on here? And I was skeptical. Now, this is just me telling you how I am processing. I was skeptical because of Ferguson. Now, if you remember Ferguson, Darren Wilson, Michael Brown, and we hear how this police officer just shoots this guy down in cold blood for no reason. And that doesn't make any sense, right? Like, he didn't leave the house that morning going, hey, you know, I can't wait to just shoot somebody down and ruin my life. And so that's the narrative that you're hearing. And then it comes out, wait a minute, Michael Brown, you know, remember, hands up, don't shoot. But Michael Brown was actually in a robbery and an assault. That's what Officer Wilson was called for. He fought with Wilson. And according to the police report, now this is where it gets dicey. If you believe the police report, when he turned on Wilson, that's when Wilson shot him. If you don't believe the police report, it's a big cover-up, and then it becomes more fodder for what's going on. So the difference in perspective is very, very important here. But me, I was skeptical. I just took a wait-and-see attitude, and I thought, you know, another shoe's going to drop eventually. So my first thought was to give the cops the benefit of the doubt. That's where I come from. So I'm waiting to hear the backstory. And then I start to pay a little bit more attention. You know, what's he doing with the knee on this guy's neck? Now, I've got at that point, a little red flag goes up because I'm looking at this guy going, what's going on? Now, I've been in the martial arts for many, many years. And the last couple of years, I've been doing judo and jiu-jitsu. And most often, the guy that I train with is a police officer. I mean, we'll train with different partners at the dojo. But the guy that I usually pair with is a police officer. And I tell you, this guy has taught me more ways to get thrown to the ground and turned into a pretzel than I can even list. I've had his knee in my back, in my kidney, in my armpit. I mean, it's just been amazing the ways that this guy could quickly take me down and subdue whatever. But at no time was his knee ever on my neck. And so that started making me think, well, what's going on? Something's not right here. So I contacted a friend on Facebook. He's been a policeman for 17 years. And I said, hey, what do you make of the use of force in Minneapolis the other day, a knee on the neck with the name George Floyd with it? And he said this, and I'm going to read it. So if I sound like I'm reading, this is why. His reply was this: in 17 years on the job, I've never been taught to do that. In fact, we've always been trained with a suspect on the ground like that to put our knee in the shoulder blade and to be very cognizant not to slip onto the neck while handcuffing or controlling someone. That training has been like that across the country since at least the late 1980s. Back in the 60s and 70s, cops were trained to use a chokehold like wrestling to knock someone out who's resisting, but that was taken out of the training books long before you or I were in high school. The cops were fired already and most likely will be charged once the investigation is complete. So that was his response, and I'm thinking, oh, wow, so this is a bigger deal than I thought. But my thought was, how stupid is this cop? Now, I wasn't thinking he must be a racist. I just saw it as, this guy's an idiot. So my next thought were, what were the other cops doing standing around? Like, if Chauvin was that poorly trained, or if he was power tripping or whatever else, what about his fellow officers? Why didn't they intervene? So that's, again, this is a running stream of consciousness of my personal processing. So I'm thinking, okay, well, why isn't somebody intervening? Then I thought, you know, okay, so this is one bad actor. Certainly there are others, but it's pretty rare. I'm giving the cops the benefit of the doubt. But that's how I'm processing. In contrast, my black friends are looking at this going, you know what? This is a metaphor. Remember Eric Garner? Remember Walter Scott? Remember Philando Castile? And Eric Garner is one of these that's truly a sympathetic case, where some of them, like what I just talked about in Ferguson, it's a little questionable, but pretty much everybody's like, hey, that shouldn't happen to Eric Garner where he can't breathe, right? I mean, so white, black, it doesn't matter who you are. You're probably going, this shouldn't have happened. And we look at it as a tragedy. So I get on Facebook again, and I say, forgive my ignorance. I'm sincerely asking, is there evidence that former Officer Chauvin personally was a racist, or that he acted from racist motives? And mens rea is that he meant to do this. Or is the anger directed at the system? My perception is the latter. But if I'm wrong, please correct me. I welcome facts. I'm not trying to prove a point. I'm saddened by this situation. Thank you. And the overwhelming response was that, you know, it's, you got to understand, this is the system. It's abuse after abuse after abuse, and that's how it's going down. So that, it's not about the officer himself being a racist, which is what I would have thought, okay, well, that's why you're angry, because this officer's a racist doing that thing. No. This is a metaphor for all the abuse that they have experienced or seen or heard from friends or, you know, over time. So, so I'm watching the protests, and that first night that I'm, you know, I have clued in and I'm watching the protests and seeing an aerial view. And I actually commented to my wife how, wow, look how spread out they are. Remember, we're in the middle of a pandemic where society has essentially been shut down. So the protests devolve into riots, and, you know, nothing says tribute to George Floyd like robbing a liquor store or running around with six pair of shoes from Foot Locker that you just looted or whatever else. And it's just, it's troubling to see that happen as a consequence. And as I read on Facebook and I hear personally from black friends that, you know, they say something like, I understand the anger, but I don't condone it. But there's nobody saying, it's not just not condoning it. Nobody's saying this is wrong and this is undermining, because that's what I'm seeing here, is that this is undermining. It makes me so sad, because the whole country is united against this injustice with what Officer Chauvin did, and we get the anger. We understand the protests. But it's sad to see the riots and the looting. And it's not just because of the riots and the looting and you're destroying other people's lives. That's bad enough, but you're squandering the moral high ground here. You're just going backwards. You're reinforcing these stereotypes. So you're giving those that are racist all the more reasons to remain racist. You're moving the moderates who would be in your camp against you when they see this on TV and go, you know, that's not right. And it makes it harder for you to make the policy gains that probably are needed. So, anyway, I show bits and pieces of MLK's march in one of my classes, Fundamentals of Leadership class, and we see the police are, you know, these very peaceful protesters singing hymns. They're quietly singing, marching along, and the police tell them, you know, look, we're going to sick the dogs on you and whatever, and then they come and do it. And they're sympathetic victims, and that's because they're not the aggressors. The police are clearly the aggressors. And that's what made such a difference in the 1960s as opposed to what you see now. Here, the rioters are the opposite. And so you're undermining your own cause in doing that. Now, I get it. The riots are expressions of anger. And thinking long term, you'd act differently. A friend of mine said, look, Darren, you got to understand. It's like, imagine that you were drowning and you have no hope of surviving and you're just angry. You're just trying to pull things down with you. And I think that word picture made some sense to me about what's going on, but it's counterproductive. It's hurting your cause. So without clear condemnation of the rioting, we're going to have a big problem, and it's going to undermine the cause. This is my perception again. I think it's sad because there are two groups. I think there are protesters who genuinely feel sadness, anger, despair, grief, and Then there are protesters, or not protesters, opportunists who are out there in the protest, mixing with it, hoping to stir up trouble. And I think that there's a small fraction that's doing that, but these opportunists are destroying businesses and jobs and lives. I mean, people that have sunk, you know, their entire life fortune into starting these businessmen who sometimes are black. And it's amazing to see this kind of destruction. I think there's an overlap there too, between some who are legitimately grieving and angry and protesting who become the rioters. But I think it's a smaller perception than what is just seen on TV. I can't be certain of this. This is just my perception. But what we see is criminal activity writ large. And when we see this and dozens of police vehicles burn and dozens of policemen injured, we look at this and go, you know, that's wrong. COVID pandemic. And, you know, I just interviewed Chris McMillan in my podcast on this past Friday, episode 15. And he's 46. He's my age, went to high school with me. And he contracted the coronavirus, felt really bad, went to the hospital. They intubated him and then put him out. He woke up 8 days later. So think about this. We're in the middle of a pandemic and people are swarming the streets, not just to wreak havoc, but they're swarming the streets very close to each other. And as they're doing this, we're going to see another spike in the coronavirus, and they're going to not just get it themselves. They're going to take it home to mom and dad and grandma and whatever. And we're going to see more cases. It's like we've rolled back the clock a month or two in what's going to happen in these major urban cities or major urban centers, where you're going to see these cases spike again. And the sick and death toll is going to be both black and blue. And it's so sad to watch. So, okay, I'm too much inside my head. The real key, I think, to unpacking this is empathy, because I'm trying to think through this. If I think how I see the picture, I see one idiot doing an idiotic thing to this guy, and it's a tragedy. It really is. But when my black friends see it, they see this metaphor. And so this came home to me when I read a friend's Facebook post. This was a former student from a dozen or so years ago. And he said, George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and I can't keep going. As a black man, I worry that this could happen to me. And honestly, I'm scared. I understand why black parents give their sons the talk about being black, and sadly, the stigma that lingers today. I also worry for my friends that are in law enforcement, who do their job daily and honorably. A city is burning down right now because some are one response to anger felt by so many that justice will not be served again for the black man. This is not how I would handle the situation, but at the root, for many, this is the response of anger, fear, and feeling voiceless. I ask God to heal the minds and hearts of all those who besmirch their obligation to their fellow man. So here's what I know. Racism is wrong. Racism is simply I'm better than you-ism. We're all made in the image of God, and all people deserve dignity and respect. And if certain segments of people are not getting that dignity and respect, we need to address that. Black people are not bad because they're black. White people are not bad because they're white. And ignore anybody who tells you that an entire group of people are bad because they're part of this entire group. All people are corrupted by sin, and it's never right to do wrong either. And regardless of the justification, whether you're covering up for your fellow officers or you're doing it out of rage to riot, we have to discriminate in the correct, meaningful sense between what is right and what is wrong. We have to make a distinction between what is right and what is wrong. I'm sure cover-ups have happened many times over time, and we need to address that kind of thing and make sure that it doesn't happen again. That is justice perverted. And when the officer has the authority of the state and he does that, I would also be just as angry as well. I get that. To riot and destroy others' property or people in anger. There was a man that was killed just protecting a federal building. Black man, doesn't matter. He's just an innocent bystander, but it doesn't matter because, hey, we're rioting and we're showing we're angry. No, that's not okay. I can't reproduce it here, but on Facebook, I saw a place that was boarded up downtown Charleston. The windows were smashed. It's on the boards on the outside. The owner wrote, "Thank you, Charleston. We're moved by your generosity. Much love, Charleston Strong," which that Charleston Strong label goes back to other tragedies like Emmanuel 9. To the mayor lack of leadership. It's your downfall. I personally hold you responsible. Well, he does, because he called the police 10 times on Saturday night when this happened. He has $100,000 in damage. Nobody came. Now, you got to understand that what he did was call the legitimate authorities and nobody came. And so he's feeling that same kind of thing that African Americans would be feeling when they're feeling like the law is stacked against them. The looters who did this should get 10 years in prison under subsection 16-7-10A2 of the South Carolina Code. You should get 15 to 30 years for arson under South Carolina law. But we're just ignoring that. And when you're ignoring justice like that, yes, I would imagine you'd be upset. And that's the same thing of what's going on here. So we need to understand that. The show is all about leadership. So I was thinking in terms of leadership, the mayors that took different approaches, it was really phenomenal to see. In some cities, the police withdrew completely and there were heavy riots. In other cities, they were there but impotent, there were riots. Where police were actually actively preventing damage, or where they enforced curfews early, there was a whole lot less, because incentives matter and people try to, when they're trying to do bad things, they'll do bad things where they can get away with it. It's like a bully on the playground. They don't go after the largest, hardest, toughest guy. They go after the weakling. So that's the same thing. So we need the police because of that sin within our hearts. We need police, but we need to create a trusting relationship between the police and the community. And hopefully we'll have that conversation, but it's getting harder and harder with all the rioting and the pillaging that's going with that. We need a place where actions are viewed as fair by all communities. And this is really hard, because if the police were coming to take away my son, I'd be angry too, even if he did it. So I'm not sure how to cross that bridge, but we need to work at that. I don't know that this is an either or when you're thinking about, are you for the police or for the black community or whatever. I don't think it is. There's a Venn diagram that's floating around on Facebook, and it said, a Venn diagram has two circles, and in the middle where they meet, that's where you see, the center of the diagram. Well, instead of two, there's four. One, George Floyd's death was murder and the cop should be in jail. I think all Americans are in that kind of place, or most Americans are in that kind of place. The second one's a little bit trickier. The police system is structurally corrupt and regularly refuses to prosecute cops. There's probably truth to that they refuse to prosecute cops. And part of that is that this is a hard job that, I don't think anybody's trying to ruin their lives by going to work. I'm in danger of getting a paper cut when I go to work, but not, having someone's life in my hands. But still, there's this overlap. And then three, mass protests and civil disruptions are legitimate and warranted actions. Pretty much everybody believes that. And then four, looting, burning businesses is immoral and counterproductive, and people who do so should go to jail. Well, I would say the majority of citizens tend to believe that. And you can be in the center. You can hold all four of those positions simultaneously. You don't have to say it's either this or that. It's not an either or. There were 4,100 or more arrests over the weekend. Thousands of businesses have been destroyed. And it's just a tragedy. Hey, listen, I'm about done, but let me share this with you. I saw this one video on Facebook, and I linked it under the Leadersmith on Facebook. If you go to Facebook, you type in Leadersmith, that comes to my page. And I linked it there because I didn't believe that I could play this for copyright reasons. I don't think anybody would have a problem when there's 1,000 or so shares. But there's a 45-year-old, a 31-year-old, and a 16-year-old. And the 45-year-old just wants to tear things up, and the 31-year-old is stopping him, saying, don't do this. We need to find a better way. And he's telling the 16-year-old, look, we failed at this. You've got to figure this out. You know why? Because I have a 5-year-old son. We got to come up with a better way, because I was here 4 years ago rioting, and nothing's changed, and we need to do this. We need to come up with a better way for the sake of my 5-year-old son. It's heartbreaking. You hear the anguish in their voice. We got to come up with a better way. Look, we're all sinners. We all need salvation. There's no one group that are the evil ones. And this was driven home to me when I read, and here's the quote for contemplation. The quotation for contemplation comes from the Gulag Archipelago. This is Alexander Solzhenitsyn. He's in Siberia in a Russian gulag. Okay, this is a pretty desperate terrible place to be. But he says this, he understood this concept. It's not about, well, they're bad and we're good. Here, listen to this. If only it were so simple. If only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were necessary only to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them. But the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. And who is willing to destroy a piece of his own heart? Hey, thanks for listening. My thoughts are by no means complete on this topic. If you can add to them and help me process them more effectively, I'd love to hear what you have to say. I'm at Darren Gurdis on Twitter, and thank you so much for your time. Thank you.